Okay, we're going to start at the top of Lamed Aleph, Lamed Aleph. The Gemara is in the middle of the sugya with regards to what happens when you have a stira in the bedikot. That the first statement came from Rabbi Yehuda, who says that if you have edut hamuchsheshet zubazub bedikot, ksheira b'dinei mimonot. So Rabbi said, try to qualify that statement and say about what cases that's true. So that's mistavro when he's talking about the wallet, but not mistavro when they're talking about the money itself, I mean, objects about it. The Gemara asks, after that, Rav Chista suggests that even dinei nefashot, that's not a problem. Forget about dinei mamonot, even in dinei nefashot, that's fine. The Gemara left it off as gavra gavra karamit. That's right, you have two different opinions. That's Rav Chista, and that's Rav Yehuda. So the Gemara continues, Naradai Amre, afilu echad omer maneh shachor, v'echad omer maneh levan mitztarfim. So this, then our Dai go even a step further and say that even if there is a question as to the color of the money or the color of the object that's being discussed over here, even that would not be a problem. Now, even those two edim can be mitzdareif, and that does not disqualify them from being a kat edim. Come on, who are they like? So my says, Reb Shua ben Karcha. That's like Reb Shua ben Karcha. Now Reb Shua ben Karcha we saw before in the Braisa does not require that the edim, right, actually see or witness the event at the same time. So Gemara goes, okay. Imer d'shmaile the Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha heichot lo mekachshu ahadade. Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha doesn't have a requirement that they see the or witness the event together, but he still has the requirement that they actually see the same event. I mean, what's the you're now assuming just because they don't have to be there simultaneously, they can be there sequentially or see the event sequentially, they don't have to see the same event. Even Rabbi Shuban Karcha agrees that you have to see that. But here where they're contradicting each other, how could you suggest that they're the same kat edim? Mi amar? Who says you say it in that case? Elohu da'amar ki hai tano. Nardai are like this tano. The tanyom, Rabbi Shuban ben Elozer, lo nechel ku beit shemai beit hilal, ashtei ki te edim. Shechat omeret matayim, bachat omeret maneh. You have two full sets of edim. One set of edim comes says he owes 200, one says he owes 100. There, Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai say, no problem. There's at least a testimony of a maneh here. Right, so then, maneh. Over here, he's going to have to pay at least a maneh. Sheesh bechal matayim, maneh. So there, they agree that he, within 200, a claim of 200 also claims a claim of 100. So you have two kate edim, one saying 100, one saying 200. We have at least 100 that he owes him, and then we can pass the din for 100. Where do they argue? Akat achat, a single kat. If one says 200 and one says 100, they are separate edut. They cannot be enjoined to be a single edut. Ubetel omrim yesh bichlal matayim maneh. Ubetel says we still apply the principle of bichlal matayim maneh even by a single kat edim. So here's a case where they're even arguing about one of the fundamental points of how much money he owes. One aide says he owes 200. One aide says he owes 100, and yet Beit Hillel says, go ahead. That's a single kat edim. You have 100 within 200. So now, echad omer chavit shel yayin, echad omer chavit shel shemen. One says wine, one says oil. Hava uvda va'ati l'kameit Rabbi Ami. And that case like this came from Rabbi Ami. Chai ve Rabbi Ami l'shlum elei chavit et chamra. Right? He says, okay, well, if that's the case, you got to pay him at least a barrel worth of wine. Miko chavit et mishka. Out of a total of a barrel of oil. So the barrel of oil was worth more. The barrel of wine is worth less. He says, if one of you says barrel of wine, one of them says barrel of oil, then the barrel of wine is included inside the price of a barrel of oil. So at least pay him a barrel worth of wine. I says, wait a minute. How could you say this? Because, come on, who are you going to say this is like? Rabbi Shimon Elazar. Okay, Eimar Dama Rabbi Shimon Elazar Heichadei Yesh Bichlal Matayim Maneh. That's when you're talking about the exact same object. You're talking about money. One just gives a greater amount than the other. It's a 200 and 100 in money. To talk about a barrel of wine and a barrel of shemen, you're talking apples and oranges. There's no way you can try to combine such items and say, oh yeah, there's a barrel of wine in every barrel of oil. So that can't be the case. So he says, no, that we misunderstood the case over here. Who would ever say in such a case that they're included together? So that's a case here where they're looking at their monetary value. They're not looking at the barrel of wine, a barrel of oil, but they're looking at the value of a barrel of oil and a value of a barrel of wine. So that becomes equivalent to maneh matayim. One of them says that it took place on the upper porch, and one of them says it took place on the lower porch. This came for Rabbi, and he said, that's fine. That does not negate their ability to be a single kat edim. Why Tziruf Edutan? Rashi claims Ki Reb Shua ben Karcha. Just like Reb Shua ben Karcha doesn't require them to witness it simultaneously. And he said, just like Rabbi Yehuda, that says when you're mitkachashay bibidikot, it's not a problem. So the question is, and something Rabbi Shimon deal with this, it's not our subject, just pointing it out, that Rashi here requires both Rabbi Shimon ben Karcha and Rabbi Yehuda. The question is, why? Why isn't Rabbi Yehuda sufficient? The problem here is that they are mitkachashay bibidikot. That's the only problem that we have here. Mitkachashay bibidikot, we don't worry about it. But why is he invoking also Rabbi Shimon ben Karcha that they don't have to see something simultaneously? Rashi mentions both Rabbi Shimon ben Karcha and Rabbi Yehuda as being the source for Rabbi's position over here. Right? The Mishnah concludes with, how do you know if you leave Beis Din that you can't spill the beans about what happened in there? That my buddies, you know, I wanted to make you innocent. But my buddy said, you're chayav, amaseh. What does he have to... Ma'aseh, shechavei rai rabu alai, what could I have done? They were a majority and I couldn't do anything about it. Ta'amar lomar, lo teilech v'achil be'amecha, ve'omer olech v'achil megalesod. So you have the pasuk from the Torah, pasuk from Mishlei, that teach us that one is, it's impermissible for one to disclose information, right, that is, otherwise would not be known. And number two is lashon hara, basically. So how Talmida is a very, it's an amazing case here. How Talmida, there's a student, Nafik Alei Kala, became rumors that circulated about him, the Gali Milsa, the Idmar Bei Midrasha. He was disclosing private conversations or private deliberations that were taking place in the Beit Midrash. But after Esrim Vitartin Shnin, after 22 years of being in the Beit Midrash, sounds like a Talmud Chacham, someone that was of importance, Afke Rabbi Ami Mi Bei Midrash, he threw him out of the Beit Midrash, Shamar Dein Gali Razia. This person discloses secrets. So here you see, even after 22 years of being the base manager, Rav Ami says it's unacceptable that a person is disclosing information or private information, and therefore he threw him out of the base medrash, because it's lashon hara. Lashon hara is unacceptable, and the person can no longer be placed in the base medrash or even on a base din. And this does come to a general principle in halacha: is what's the obligation of individuals to keep a secret? In that if you are given information, what is the obligation upon you, or what type of obligation falls upon you in order to hold that information secret? And when can you disclose the information? The Gemara in the Bavli discusses why does the Torah in many places say lemor? So the Bavli discusses, or has a drasha, that lemor means that unless you have permission to say it, lo tomar. You're not allowed to say it unless you have permission to say it. That meaning that any piece of information that's given to you is assumed to be done in confidence. Therefore, you cannot pass on that information unless you have specific permission to pass it on. So again, here, this idea that people have to maintain confidentiality and the privacy of the information that they are granted is very important. It has manifestations both in halacha and in secular law, but the obligations to keep privacy and to keep quiet when you have information that you shouldn't, that is not supposed to be disclosed to others. Obviously, there are exceptions to the rule, like the exceptions to the rules of lashon hara, where it actually make a difference. For instance, there are tshuvos about, I'm trying to remember now, one tshuva, I'm trying to remember whose tshuva, I think it might be in the Bi Omer of Rabbi Avadi Yosef, about an individual friend who knows that his friend has epilepsy. And he lies on his application for a driver's license and does not tell him that he has epilepsy. Do you have an obligation to disclose to the authorities that he does have epilepsy? So here you have information that's private. Right? Right. So that's, Rav Avadi Yosef says, well, there's another issur called Lo Tamor Al Dam Re'echa. This person can be misakein other people's lives. But, right, himself, if he chooses to put himself at risk, right, we're not going to, there, I don't know if you have to disclose it, but if he's going to put others at risk, then there's Lo Tamor Al Dam Re'echa. And you might have an obligation from the other side to actually disclose the information. The same thing happens with Shiduchim. If you have information that, for instance, a doctor has information about a woman. Here was another wild case. A woman who had reconstructive surgery because she was born without a rechem, without a womb, and she's unable to, obviously, have children. But she doesn't disclose this to the individual she gets engaged to. But the doctor has the information. Do you have an obligation? Does the doctor have an obligation to tell the individual or the shidduch that is, she's going to get engaged so that this woman cannot bear children? She's not disclosing it. So there the suggestion was to disclose the information, bring her in and speak to her and tell her about the obligation of giving and disclosing information. In the end, she refuses to disclose the information, that there might be an obligation on the individual to disclose the information because it's really a mekach tos, where she's deceiving and disregarding the rights of others to this information, especially when it's in such a relationship. So anyway, these are important shalas about keeping privacy and keeping sodot, and there has to be a careful balance between when not to disclose and when to disclose. But again, when to disclose is has to be really fettered out and carefully looked at before one speaks about others, especially when it comes to Lashon Hara. New Mishnah. Kol zman shemevi ra'aya soter et hadin. The din is open as long as he can bring additional evidence to the case. So then we can undermine the case. Now it sounds like from here, even after the case is closed, means they've come to Pesach, as long as he has new information, he can come to us with that new information. Says, anything you have, anything less that you have, bring it to us in the next 30 days. So, matzav tov shloshim yom soter. If he finds it within 30 days, he can undermine the case. V'achar shloshim yom, right, after 30 days, eino soter, he lost his chance. We gave him a 30-day time limit, he expired. Right, his statute of limitations run out, and then he can't undermine the case. Amar Rabbi Shimon Alom, asezeh, shlo matzav tov shloshim yom. What right do you have to impose this 30-day limit on the individual? What happens if the edim showed up, or evidence showed up after 30 days? He couldn't have known any better. Why should he lose out because of that?
Which makes it sound like it's, you know, not
unlimited. But now here, but then when they impose a limit, then they can limit it. I mean, that's when there was no limit imposed.
You know, stop.
Right, that's the default. The default situation is no limit imposed. Here, where there was a limit imposed, right, then he can't undermine it. Then Rabbi Shimon comes along and says, so now, next case. Amarlo ave edim. Bring your edim in. Amarlo in the edim. Says, I don't have any edim. Amar avar raya, bring any of your proof. Amar ein li raya, he says, I have nothing. If at the time he finds finds some evidence, or he finds a dim, that you're done. They gave you the opportunity to bring your evidence to the court, and you didn't do it. So we don't accept anymore. Again, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel speaks up. What's this guy going to do? He had no idea that these edim existed. He finds them later. So now what? He's precluded from bringing them because he didn't know about them at the time that you asked him to bring them in? So what? He didn't know that he had any proof. And then he finds a proof. What should this individual do? Because he didn't have edim at the time and he found them, or he didn't have a raya and then he found them. What are you going to do with these? What, this guy's going to lose out just because he found the information later? So right, Rashi mitchayev b'din. This is the last case here. He saw that the case was going against him. But Mar kivru ploni uploni v'yaduni. Bring up these two guys who are going to testify on my behalf. Oh, shotzi raya mitachet puntato. Suddenly, whips out of his jacket. All of a sudden, he's got some evidence. You know, oh, forgot about this document. Right out of this coat. That's it. Eno klum. That's nothing. So Rashi over here claims in this last case, there's a case where he said, they said to him, bring any proof that you have, and he said, no, I don't have anything to bring. And then the problem is that the edim are present, or the raya is present. So over here, as opposed to even Rabbi Shimon Gamliel agrees in this case, because in this case, the evidence was not hidden from him, or these edim were not present, not present before. I mean, they were present here before. And when they said to him, bring edim, and he said, I don't got any edim. Then all of a sudden, an hour later, and the case is going against him, he goes, guys, come on, come up and speak up for me. Like, all of a sudden they can speak up. There's a circumstantial evidence that the reason that he's bringing these edim in, or the reason that he's bringing this evidence all of a sudden, is because the case is going against him. So we have less confidence in him bringing these proofs over here because they were available to him beforehand. And since they were available to him and he didn't take advantage of them, then we say, listen, that's not, we don't accept this type of evidence if he didn't bring it beforehand. Right? Amar Rabba Bar Avuna Alocha K'Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. Alocha is like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. Alright, well, obviously, if the halacha is like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, the halacha is not like the chachamim. Why do I need both statements? So, pshita, came into our halacha, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, mimelo yodano, dein halacha chachamim. So, ma'adutim, what I have thought, came into our halacha, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, I would have thought, because he says that the halacha is like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, hani mila la tchila, the chatchila, that's only left tchila, but bidyavid, Shaper Dami, but if the court rules like the Chachamim, it'll be okay. That if he does it, we reverse it. I mean, not only is it that the halacha is like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, but the Chachamim's position is invalid. And therefore, if he passes like the Chachamim's position, we're going to undo it. I mean, if a court conducts itself like the position of the Chachamim, we're going to undermine that or undo what they do. It's an interesting use of the term bidyevet. Generally, the chatchil and bidyevet is with a positive action. Somebody's taking a positive action. We demand a certain action of you. If you do less of an action, or you do less of what's demanded of you, then we say bidyevet. Over here, it's actually an interesting case, because over here, it's the acceptance of evidence. So, lechatchila, we're saying accept the evidence. Well, if he does bidyevet, you were going to suggest bidyevet.
Don't accept
the evidence, right, which is it's a stranger use of the term bidyevet, but that's the havamina of what have been the havamina of the Gemara. The Gemara says, therefore, ain't halacha kechachmim. Amalo aveidim,
amrevishim.
Oh, so as Rashi says, because they're majority. Maybe the case of Rov versus Yachid, so fine, we pass them like the Yachid. But maybe for the Rov, we should say at least Bediyevit, it works with the Rov. Right, so now the next case is Havei Deim, and he says, Omer or Tok Shlosh Yom, or Ainli, Amar Rav Barhun, Amar Rav Yochanan, Alokha Kedivre Chachamim. Over here, the Alokha is like the Chachamim, Amar Rav Barhuna, Amar Rav Yochanan, Ain Alokha, Kerav Shim Gamliel. And again, he makes the two statements. The Gemara says over here, Pshita. Over here we say that's exactly what we want to know. Before we said that the halacha is like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, so I want you to know in this next case in the Mishnah the halacha is not like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. Habakulu.
What was that case again?
In the Mishnah, it's a case. We're talking about the case where he says Ainli, where he says I have no other evidence. He says, when they say to him, please bring all your evidence, and he says, I have no more evidence to bring. So those cases, the halacha is not like Rav Shmuel. The first case that we had that Rav Shmuel argued on was the 30-day limit. When you give a statute of limitations for 30 days, and then he says that he doesn't bring it within the 30 days, Rav Shmuel Gamliel says he has the right to bring it after the 30 days. There, Rav Huna says, halacha, kir, Rav Shmuel Gamliel. The next two cases in the Mishnah, at least the next two, maybe even the three cases, are where he says, Zainli. He says, I don't have it, and then after he says, I don't have it, he shows up with the evidence. So over here, he says, halacha, kir, right, divrei chachamim over here. In this case, it's going to be the halacha is like Rabbi Gamliel, Rabbi the chachamim, not like Shimon Gamliel. Now, why did the over here to answer your question, Shaul? Before, what's the difference between the chachamim and Rabbi Shimon that you would assume that you would have said b'diavad like the chachamim? Is because they're the rov. The Gemara over here does not suggest that habamim. You see that when they pass it like the chachamim, we don't say, oh, maybe the halacha b'diavad would be like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. That we don't say. So here, the Gemara says that no, this comes to teach you that in halacha Rabbi Shimon Gamliel here. But in every other instance, the halacha is like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, and that's lafuke mehad amar Rabbi Bar Chano and Rabbi Yochanan. Koma kamashishan Rabbi Shimon Gamliel b'nishnateinu. Anytime Rabbi Shimon Gamliel appears in a Mishnah, halacha kimoto, the halacha is like them. Chutz, three cases: mi'arev, v'tzidan, v'raya achrona. Our case here, by the way, is raya achrona. They said to him, "Bring your last proof." Raya achrona is right here. So over here, this case of Raya Chona, where we say the halacha is not like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, so even over here, Rabbi Rav Huna agrees that the halacha is not like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. By the right case, the latter case of Raya, that case, Rabbi Rav Chana and Rabbi Rav Huna agree that the halacha is not like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. The argument between them is in these other two cases of Tzidan and Arev. Tzidan and Arev, is the halacha like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel or not? According to Rabbi Rav Huna, the halacha is like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel in those other two cases, because the only case where the halacha is not like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel is right here. Whereas according to Rabbi Chano, there's that those two cases are also exceptions to the rule that the halacha is like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. So Mar says, so that's Rabbi Rav Huna argues on this position of Rabbi Chano. So you know that Tavula Dina, this young child that they brought, Katan, that they brought to Din, Kameda Rav Nachman for Rav Nachman. Now, it's an interesting case. I'm like, Itla Chasade, do you have any witnesses? I'm like, lo. Itla Charaya, do you have any proof? I'm like, lo. Chayve Rav Nachman. Rav Nachman made him chayav. He had no evidence, he had nothing to do, so he asked his chayav here. So there are a couple of questions, and I'll explain some of the questions about the case. So Habakkuk Bochi Vazil, who's crying. Shamu Ahanachin Shay, some people heard, what's this kid going around crying for? So they heard about this. Amrulay, Anu Yadana Mili Dabuch, we happen to know the information about what happened with your father, and we can come and testify on your behalf. So Amr Rav Nachman, Baha Afilu Rabbanan Modu. Even here the Rabbanan agree, the Yanoka Bemili Davu Alo Yada. You can't have an expectation. The expectation by a normal person is that he knows the evidence to his case, or he should have the information. But he doesn't show up to the information and says, Ainli, I don't have, that means he doesn't have. But a child or a katan in mile devua, in his father's affairs, he says, Ainli, I don't have evidence, doesn't mean that there is no evidence out there. Just means that he's not aware of the evidence because he's not his father. So therefore over here we do admit there is the evidence here will be admissible to the case, even according to the Chachamim, after he says Ainli, because the Ainli is not a definitive Ainli, because he doesn't necessarily have the information to say that otherwise. And when we find out the other information, he wasn't aware of it. Interesting question that comes up over here is, why was the Katan brought to the court by himself? We've learned a principle, we heard this in the first parak, that there's a violation of due process when you don't bring both Balei Dinim in front of the court at the same time. So why was Rav Nachman calling the Katan in to speak to him? Where was the other Baal Din? Or how did the other Baal Din present the case? Rav Nachman obviously knew the case, and the case was presented before he called the Katan in. How come he's calling the Katan in after the presentation of the other side of the case? So, what? Oh, right, very good. So Tosfos gives two answers to the question. Tosfos, the last Tosfos over here on the Amud. Tosfos says one possible answer is, just like Adai just said, there's an exception for Katan. We have the same rules. Even in secular law, there's a similar type of case that Katanim are allowed to, you know, give testimony by video. You know, sometimes they try to protect the minor, or they do it in a manner that he's not overwhelmed by the court situation. So here, it also says, it's an exceptional case. Katanim get, right, because of the problems of bringing Katanim to court, or because of the invisibility of doing such a thing, we say Katanim are an exception to the rule. That's one possibility. Inami, another possible exception to the rule is, right, lo kamar nizgaken el sheyesh shtar, to mekaymet el shtar shelo bifnei baldin v'kana yashtar. So the case is, when do we say you can't bring the two balei din before you? That's when there's no shtar. But over here, when there's a shtar, and the whole idea is that Beis Din is validating the shtar, or the shtar is the evidence, over there to bring in without the other Baal Din is not a problem, because all you're dealing is with the shtar. Now once the shtar is validated, you can call in the other Baal Din and say, okay, we have a shtar, what are you doing about this shtar? Or why does this shtar standing against you? So the case is not about, again, if you have a shtar, the case is not about the two parties, it's about validating the shtar, or getting the shtar in place. That's a single party case. Once the shtar is validated, then you bring in the other party and say, okay, how do you respond to the fact that there is a shtar here? We don't then say, oh, we can't validate the shtar, we can't bring the shtar in without the other Baal Din. The other Baal Din really has nothing to do with the shtar. Whoever's holding the shtar has the power to find out if it's good or to try to validate it. And once it's validated, then you have a case when he whips out the shtar and says, pay me. So that's the two possibilities Tosfos give. Either that a katan is an exception or that shtar is an exception. All right. So now the next case, Hayitza, the nafak shtar metute yada. This woman had some sort of shtar that she whipped out. Amrale yadana b'hai shtar de prihavo. But she says also that I know about this shtar that it's paid. So here we have a case where the woman is this individual is a trustee, so a third party, that the love and the malve gave the shtar over to this woman to hold on behalf of both parties, right, to know when the loan is outstanding. So they believed her with regards to holding the shtar, whether it belonged to Lover or Malveh. So then she comes in and says, I do have the shtar, but it's paid. So now, Hemna Rav Nachman. Nachman believed her. It's basically what I would consider a case of like Pesha Asu Pesha Hitir. The only reason that there's a shtar here is because she brings it out, because she's the trustee. She can make all determinations. And when she said it's paid, we assume that she's right, that she said it's paid. Amalei Rava, the Rav Nachman. So Rava questioned this Pesach of Rav Nachman. Says, come on, who are you holding like? Says Karebi. So the first answer is like what you were suggesting, is that they trusted him. Because why? What does Rebbe say? That you can transfer ownership of shtarot. Right? That's the basic principle of Rebbe, that you're able to transfer ownership of shtarot. So the Rava, or the assumption over here in this part of the Gemara, is that why is the trustee believed? Trustee is believed because they actually own the shtar now. When they both gave over the shtar to this individual, and they say, Otiot niknot b'msira, is that they actually gave the shtar to this woman, and now she owns the shtar in a sense. She owns the shtar, then she can be the one who makes the decision about paru or no paru. She can make that decision. So Rav Nachman said back to him, Amarlei, shiny ocha. Here's a different case. Di baye kalte. Because over here, if she wants to, she could just put it up in flames. She can throw it into her fireplace. And she has two choices here. She can show the shtar, or she can burn it up in the fireplace. She burns it up in the fireplace, there's nothing to talk about. So therefore, Miguel, when she pulls it out and says, here's the shtar, but it's paid, we say that basically what I was suggesting before is Pesha Asur, Pesha Hitir. She's the one who's bringing the shtar, so she can also tell us what the shtar. Without her, we don't know about the shtar. Without her, the shtar could be up in flames, right? And we won't know about it. So the fact is that she brought it to us, and then says it's paid, we're going to believe her. So Mar says,
if the Malbec, who wants to claim payment, goes to court, he says, well, there's a shtar. This woman has the shtar.
And she'll say, I don't have it. It was burnt up. It's gone.
There's no proof that she has it.
Right. If there's evidence, the fact that based in Sina, we have a deem that otherwise can verify the shtar, then you have a problem. Right, then she will not believe. The migo goes away. All right, that's right. Exactly what you're describing is where the migo will disappear. All right, so then, Igada Amri, some say that Lohem no Rav Nachman. Rav Nachman did not trust her. So Rav Nachman, Vahayi Bayi Kalte. Wait a minute, if she could burn it up, she has a migo, she should believe her because she could have burnt it up. Where it says, Kevin di Chazik Vibaydina. There you go, Shol. Once it's established in Beis Din, so Rashi says, what's Kevin Itchazik Rebeinido as Shukotopo Hempek? Beis Din already validated the Shtar. Beis Din already validated the Shtar, then, Ibai Lekalte Lo Amrinim. We can't say she can burn it up. Because, since Beis Din's aware of the Shtar already, and they validated the Shtar, right, she's not a Pesach also Pesach Yitr anymore, because she's not the one bringing us the Shtar anymore. Right. Or Maisa Bezin has a call, but here, the fact is that Maisa Bezin is as if it's done. It's a done deal. She can't now try to whip and say, I'm believed because I have control over the shtar. Tosus does not like Rashi's pshat of the Itchazik Bebedina in that manner, explaining it, that it was a henpek, that it was validated in Beis Din. But the Rabbi Tosus says that Itchazik Bebedina Shura'ua Biyada, that they saw it. Beis Din saw the existence of the shtar, or again, if Edim come and say that there is a shtar that exists, in that case, we say she can't make the claim of Migo anymore. Again, because she's not the one providing us with the evidence that there is a shtar here. We have outside evidence that there's a shtar. Once there's outside evidence of the shtar, she no longer has this right veil of protection in terms of being believed, because she's not the one who's telling us we know the shtar exists. So if she says she burnt it up, then we can question whether what her motives were, why she did this. On the other hand, if she comes before us and says this is the shtar and it's paid, and we have no other way to verify that the shtar is there, then it's a pesha also a pesha hitu. Right? Itvei rov of Nachman. Simpon sheyesh alav edim itkayamim bechotamav. Now simpon is a word that's used generically for anything that undermines something else. So over here, if we're talking about shtarot or a loan document, a simpon would be the right. Would be shobar, would be the receipt. Right, so over here you have a simpon that has a dim on it. It's kaimim bechotamav. And you go, you verify, you want to verify the shobar is real, you check with its signature, right, signatories to the document. Ain't a lot of dim. If there are no dim on it, right, the yotzei mitachat yad shlish, or it comes out of the hand of a third party is the one who whips it out. Oh, shiatza achar chitum shtarot, or it's written at the bottom of a shtar kasher. Over there, it's Katsher. Now, Alma, so what do we see from this? That Shlish Mehemen. That Shlish is believed. That generally a trustee is believed no matter what. If it's Yotze Mitachad Yed Shlish, they're believed. They are Neman to say or to direct it in any way. That the Shkar is Kasher. So Mar says, Tziyuv to the Rav Nachman, that's going to be a problem for Rav Nachman over here. Because Rav Nachman suggested before that when it comes to a Shlish is not necessarily believed in these cases. But in our case over here, right, we have a case where there's no edim on the shtar. It's coming out of a shlish, and therefore we say that the shlish is believed. It's called a kosher shtar.
Meaning the simpon?
Yeah. Over here, that'd be the simpon. It's a kosher simpon because the third party has it. So you see here that a third party can hold it and they're believed. How come you say no? So my says, Tiyufta the Rav Nachman. That's going to be a strong question. That's this side of the Rav Nachman who says that they're not believed. The second Lashon of Rav Nachman. Person can go on forever. It's either your question until he has nothing more to say. I mean that until he has a point where he says ainly, right? Then the case keeps going on. So that's a Rashi. If you look at Rashi, same tanotav. Mashman shomer bebedin ainly. Lo edim velo raya v'chazav emar kivu ploni uploni shayu mezumanim sham tchila matchila suter tanutav lomar inli, and now he's starting to undermine the case over there. So now vayomer, but now the problem is the continuation of the statement. So it sounds like from here that if he can bring along anything he wants, right, until he stops having any evidence to bring, which means that he says inli. Vayomer kivu ploni uploni beiduni, but then it says wait, if he says I have this and so and so to come, they can testify for me. So when it says hagufakasha. Amartis that same tanotav, you said that, okay, when he's finished with what he has to say, it's over. Atan Rabbanon. That sounds like the Rabbanan who say once he says I have no more evidence to bring, the case is over. And then after that you say, Kirvu ish ploni uploni. Oh, you so-and-so, come forward and testify for me. That says like I'm Shimon Gamliel. After he says I have no more evidence, he says, come on over here, guys. That's the case. So how do you have it? There's a statement of Rav Dimim pi Rav Yochanan sounds like a stira, internal stira. So yichite ma'akul Rav Shimon Gamliel. So what are you going to say? The whole thing is Rav Shimon Gamliel. Uprushe kamefarish. It's explaining what the meaning is. My achistatim tanotav. What does it mean that he's finished giving all the evidence here? That's achimar kivu ploni uploni v'yaduni. Meaning until he says he's done, the case is done, until he brings the next piece of evidence. That's Rav Shimon Gamliel's opinion. Somebody says you can't say that. Va'amar Rabba Bar Chana, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Kol Makom Shishana Rabbi Shimon Gamliel b'mishtatenu halacha kamoto chutz me'reiv v'tzidan v'raya chuna. This is one of the cases where the halacha is not like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. If that's the case, and that's in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, Amar Rabbi Chana, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, he says the halacha in this case is not like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. So how would you have a memra from Rabbi Dimi in the name of Rabbi Yochanan saying the halacha is like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, setting up a whole case like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel if the halacha is not like him? So that can't be the explanation. Ella, Kiyat Rav Shmuel Bar Yehuda, Rav Yochanan. Rav Shmuel Bar Yehuda came and said over the name of Rav Yochanan, Lo Olam Mevi Rayav Soter, Achistatim Tomutav. You can bring proofs until you have no more evidence, meaning until you say, I have nothing more to bring. But Yomer Lo, Have Edim, Vomer Inli Edim, Have Raya, Vomer Inli Raya. Aval Bau Edim in Bidinat Yam, Oshaita Diskia, Shalavi Mufkedet Biyad Acher. Edim show up from overseas. They weren't present at the time. He said, Inli. Or there's a document that's been found that it relates to his father's obligations of his father's, or evidence that was left to his father that a third party was holding on behalf of his father that he wouldn't have known about. That's like we said before, that Rav Nachman said even the Chachamim agree where the evidence wasn't available to him, and he said Ainli not because he didn't have any more evidence, he said Ainli because he wasn't aware of this evidence. This evidence shows up later, like the case of the Yanoka, or the case of the child, then we allow him to undermine the case. Rav Dimi am Rav Yochanan, so this then we have these types of cases. Here before we had Rav Dimi bring something in the name of Rav Yochanan, now we have another memra in the name of Rav Dimi am Rav Yochanan. Tokefet chaveru bedin. Someone who, it's a question of what tokefet chaveru over here, is a case where he's trying to drag him to a Beis Din. He's overpowering his friend and dragging him to the Beis Din he wants. So tokevet chaveru b'din. So in that case, we say echad omer nidonkan, v'echad omer nilech l'makom avad. One of them says, let's adjudicate the case right here. The other one says, no, we're going to the makom avad. We're going to the central Beis Din. Why would you want to go to the central Beis Din? Rashi claims because there are tamidei chachamim harbei. There are many tamidei chachamim there. He has a bosh mehem. This guy will be embarrassed. This guy won't, if we bring the case up there, this guy's not going to play all his games in front of all these chachamim. So he wants to go to the Beit Avad for that reason. Kofino Tov, Yelech Makom Avad, would say, you're going. Get your tickets ready, you're heading to the central Beis Din. Amar Lefanav, Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi, Misha Noshe, Bechavero Maneh, Yotzi Maneh Al Maneh. So someone has a loan outstanding, a creditor has a loan outstanding with this individual of 100 zuz. And then he says, listen, you got to go travel to the Beit Avad to get your money back. So now he's going to expend 100 zuz to get his 100 zuz back. He may as well just stay here and break even. He doesn't need to go to break even. To get the money out of the Beit, to get it, if to win the case, he's got to spend so much money. How could you make that demand of him? Elikofin ado v'dan b'iro. Say, right here, right now, you do it over here. If you remember earlier in the Gemara, we had back on Daf Chav Gimel with Aleph, Rabbi Elazar differentiated between a malve and a love. Depends on whether it's the debtor or the creditor making the assistant, the insisting on going to Beit Avad. If the creditor makes the insistence, then he's got to go. The debtor's got to go because eved love le ish malve. On the other hand, if it's the love that's making the demand, the malva can say, too bad, I lent you money, I'm not going to expend all this money to get my money back, you're going to do it right here. Right, so now the Gemara continues, Shnayim shenit atzmu b'din, two people who are hardened in their positions. One says we're staying here, one says we go to makom avad. Kofino to b'dan b'iro, say right here, right now, you're going to do it. If you have something that the case is too complicated, you think you're not going to get the case adjudicated properly, here you'll send letters up to the Beit Avad and you'll get answers to the questions. He says, listen, the Beis Din here locally comes to a psak. He says, I want the psak in writing because I think there might be something wrong with this psak. I want to be able to take it up to the Beit Avad. He can make a demand that they give it to him, the psak, in writing. The Yavama has to follow Yabam in order to get to perform chalitza. In order to perform chalitza, the obligation is on the Yavama to find the Yabam. Ad kama, how far does she have to go? Amarabiyami, I feel mitzveria litzipori. Ephraim Tveria Tzitzibori, even though there's already a Beis Din in Tveria that is even greater than that of Tzipori, if her husband's in Tzipori, her potential husband, right, her Yabam is in Tzipori, she's got to go to Tzipori and adjudicate the case in front of the Beis Din in Tzipori. That the Yabam gets to determine the venue for the case. Right now, the interesting thing here is that the Gemara brought down a bunch of cases where he had disagreements about where you should go. One was a tokefet chavero, one who was arguing with his friend, one wants to go to Beit Avad, one wants to go locally, and then the Gemara says, Yelech Mokum Avad, you go to the central authority. We had the second right case, where Zemar Safra, Shnaim Shinit Atzmu B'din, two people who are hard in their positions, one goes here, one says to Beit Avad, we say, God bless you, we say, stay here. How come the conclusion... Right, Rabbi Lazar is cholik on the first case. We're going to see in a second that Rabbi Lazar actually has an opinion that differentiates between them. He's not necessarily disagreeing, but rather modifying the words of, the circumstances of Rabbi Yochanan, because we know that Rabbi Lazar never said anything against his Rabbi, Rabbi Yochanan. So over here, we're going to have to say the same thing, though the Gemara doesn't raise that fact, but the truth is that we're going to have to modify Rabbi Lazar to say just like the other cases. So keep this in mind. That's the setup right now. Then we go. Amar of Kana, Mikra, what's the proof to this? Vikaru lo zikneiro, velo zikneira. Because it says by the Yabam, Vikaru lo zikneiro, right? Chalutzanal, chalutzanal. Right? They have to call his, the Zakanim of his city are going to call him these, after he does the chalitza, that's what they call him. But it says zikneiro, the Zakanim of his city will call him that, not her, the Zakanim of her city. So therefore we say that the Yavama has got to go over and find the Yabam. Amar meimar yochasa kofino tov, yelech demakom avad. The loch is that we force him to go up to Beit Avad. What about the position of Rabbi Lazar? It says Kofen Oto Biro and Dan Biro. That's only when it's a debtor making the insistence that they go to the different venue. There, the Malve say, no, we're doing it here. Well, Malve, when it comes to Malve, David Lovel the Ish Malve. When it comes to a Malve, the creditor can decide the venue. If he says we want to go to the Beit Avad, we say off to the Beit Avad because he's in control. The Malve is in control. So now we'll see a couple of interesting things here. One question is, okay, what is the difference in these cases? So there are those that want to explain here that the cases are actually different. In the case of Nitatzmu Adin is that both parties are stubborn. They're equally stubborn. They're equally stubborn, and they don't, one says no, one says I want to go here. And we say, no, stand be your own, stay in your city. Do it over here. Why? Because over there it seems to be that the claim is not about, right, that we're worried that the Dayanim are not going to necessarily come to the right conclusion. We're more worried about there is that each party is stubborn, and we want to get them into one venue. We say, listen, we're going to do it here, and do it now. And you'll deal with it. You guys are stuck in your positions. We'll take care of it. If you really want to go to Beit Avad, we'll send letters up there if there's a problem. We'll do whatever it takes to make sure that the din comes out right. The problem in the previous case is that Tokevet Chavero is that one party has the upper hand. The other party is not have the same level or strength as the upper party. So Tokevet Chavero is when one party has a bigger strength is forcing the case or the evidence in a certain direction. Over there we say go to the Beit Avad. Why? Because then if he goes before the Beit Avad, a lot of times many chachamim in there would be boshed to act in such a manner. This person is acting in a haughty manner. We're worried about him accepting the psak of Beis Din. We're worried about him, right, how he's treating the other Baal Din. All of these problems, when it's an uneven case, we say go to the Beit Avad and level the playing field. But in a case where they're on the same level or they're on level playing field, there we say stay Beit Iro and deal with it in your city. At least according to the Hav Amina. Then later on, what you said is true, which is that there's Rabbi Lazar, and we differentiate between Lova and Malva. So that'll be the solution in the end to the difference between these two statements. But before we know that's the differentiation, how would the Gemara differentiate between the cases? So then you'd have to say that the differentiation has to do with how strong or the entrenched are the two parties here, or is it one party causing the problem or two parties that are causing the problem? Right now.
So why does it say it's marnami? It seems that the ring arrived from the case of Hatoke from the case of Nisatsu.
Maybe the question is why a Mamar Paskin is Kofi Notova Lech to Makom Avad? Why is he Paskin to go to Makom Avad when we have Rabbi Lazar who says otherwise? So why is he Paskin like Rabbi Yochanan and we have Rabbi Lazar and Rav Safra, right, saying otherwise? So that would be the question here. And that comes back to what we're discussing over here, that the case is different. The two cases are different. That could be a possible answer until we reach the point where Rabbi Lazar is not really disagreeing. In the end, Rabbi Lazar really agrees to Rabbi Yochanan's position. It's just you have to modify what the case is in which Rabbi Yochanan said and Rabbi Lazar said it. But before you reach that point, how did you pass an halacha like Rabbi Yochanan over Rabbi Lazar over here? If we have Rav Safra's position that upholds it, and you have evidence of the fact that maybe Rabbi Lazar is right over here. So that's what we're explaining. Explain what is the difference between Rabbi Lazar and Rabbi Yochanan. Maybe they really aren't arguing. Even before we reach the point of Lova and Malve as being the distinction, maybe they're not arguing because the case is actually given about the Balei Dinim. Depending on how, if we have a level playing field, or we have an uneven level playing field. If we have an uneven playing field, we say go to the Beit Avad. Level playing field, we say Dan Biro, and maybe even here, we say Yochas HaKofino Tovilech HaMagam Avad, might be even according to Rabbi Lazar, before we reach this next stage where we differentiate between Malv and Lova and say Rabbi Lazar is just modifying Rabbi Yochanan and saying when does it apply, when does it not apply. Alright?
You're not satisfied, you want to go in, you're not satisfied, you have the right of appeal.
Right. So that happens to be another interesting thing in the Rishonim. Most of the Rishonim agree that you can't get a written statement from Beis Din on any case. It's only a case where there's an argument about the venue, right, to stay in this venue, then you can demand a written explanation so that you can take it somewhere else. But otherwise, in a general case, we don't have for a written explanation. You can't make a demand of Beis Din to give you a written explanation for their reasoning. This is just unique to this case. So that's an interesting point. That interesting point that Tosfos makes over here. Two Tosfos here that are interesting. V'yotzi maneh al maneh. Rabbi Lazar's question about you're going to pay 100 mezuzos to get another mezuz. So Tosfos says mikan mitchayev b'din d'lo mishalim li'idach yitziotav. Someone who loses a case doesn't pay the other's expenses. That's a very common procedure today in secular courts. That if you bring the case and then you lose the case, not only do you lose the case, you also pay the monetary expenditures of the court fees of the other individual. Rabbi Tosfos says you see from this that if he won the case. So why would he care? If he went up to the Vav, Beit Avad, and he expended 100 zuz, and he owes him 100 zuz, if he's going to get reimbursed from the Lovet, if he wins the case, he'll go. Then he'll be owed 200 zuz from the Lovet. So Tosfos says, from here you can see that we don't reimburse him. If we reimburse him, he would be indifferent about going to the Beit Avad. So that can't be the case that he's getting reimbursed. Number two is, the next Tosfos Zimar Kidvul Tunuli Mezatam, this is what I just explained before, Dafka Hecha Dinit Atzmu Ladun. That's only when they were entrenched in their positions. But Kafal Atul Ladun Kan, Ava Ba'alma Lo. In general, we do not make a demand to Beis Din to write down their reasoning or document their position or their conclusion. Alright. Shalchulei Lamar Ukva. The Beis Din in Tveria sent a message to Mar Ukva. But the Zivlei Kebar Batyo says, who has a shine about him. He has a radiance like the son of Batya. The son of Batya meaning Moshe Rabbeinu. There's a radiance about him that appears like Moshe Rabbeinu, and that this either is like a compliment to him. One other possibility is Batya is Beiti, the one who is Neman Bebeito, like Moshe Rabbeinu. And so either way, they're giving a compliment, a large compliment to Mar Ukvor there. Now, Rashi brings here a little agadata on the side. He says, Matzata b'sefer agadashi, Mar Ukvor b'al tshuva. Mar Ukvor was a b'al tshuva. He fell in love with this woman. The only problem was, she was married. So she fell in love with this woman, she was married, and he fell sick. He was lovesick for this woman, couldn't get up. And it happened to be that eventually this woman or her husband fell on hard times, and they borrowed money from Mar Ukvor. It came to a position that she was under such pressure that to get the money or to not have to pay the money back that she acquiesced to sleep with Mar Ukvor in order not to have to pay the money back. So she got to that point. Mar Ukvor, after she had agreed, let her go and said, no. He says, I'm not going to do it. He didn't cave and he didn't give in to his Yetzer Hara. Even though he had the ability now to sleep with her, he didn't give in. So Gemara says, after that, he got better. He was healed. And when he used to walk around in the shuk, there was a candle that was burning above his head, meaning a radiance about him because he had overcome such a difficult test and temptation that when he overcame it, he walked around with that radiance of not being submitting or to the radiance. And that's just the Mar Ukvor. Right, so they sent this to Mar Ukvor. It says, all right, Ukvor habavli kabo kadmana. We have a Ukva in the Bavli showed up in front of us, right, and complained that that this brother Irmiya acted inappropriately towards him. Rashi brings two possible interpretations of Hevir Lai Tederech. One is that he was misares him, which is interesting. The other one is that he was stole money from me, that he did something wrong in some business dealing, some partnership, he did something wrong with me, or in getting the Rusha, something that he stole money from him. So Amar Lo, they say to, right, Irmiya, Hesiu, Vir'eh Panenu B'Tveria, tell him, listen, you know, to Marukva, take him and bring him, see us in Tveria. All right, so now the Gemara says, Agufukash, it sounds like there's a problem with what this message was. Amart Amrulo, first you said to him, say to him, Alma Dayunu, they're suggesting that Mar Ukva take care of him on where they are. Don't send him up to Tveria to the Beit Avad. Do whatever you have to do over there. Atun Asiu, you guys call him in. Vire Panenu, but Tveria. And then you're going to send him up to Tveria? So he doesn't, there's a stira in this statement over here. It sounds like you should adjudicate the case and send him up to us in Tveria. Well, it's one or the other. Either you, Mark Fla, do the case there, or you send him up to us in Tveria. So Alma Shadrua, there, it sounds like from that they sent him up. Shadrua Hacha, I mean, send him up there. Hachi Kamrei, this is what you have to say. Amrule Dainun Atun, you, Mar Ukva, do the case. Itzayit Sayit, if he listens, fine. Velo Hesiu V'ir Panenu B'Tveria. Otherwise, send him up to Tveria to get a psak. So now, what is it? So over here, what the understanding was that this Irmiya was a difficult individual. Right? So it was a difficult individual, this Irmiyachi. So he said, they sent him out for, listen, if you can get him to come to court and adjudicate the case in front of you, fine, go ahead and do the case and take care of it. We trust you to do the case. Go ahead. On the other hand, if he refuses, or if he's problematic, tell him, listen, you're on the hook now, the Beit Avad will see you, and go up to the Beit Avad, and then we'll get the Psak Halacha from the Beit Avad. So Tosu says, itzai, itzai, it means in the phrase, ilo tzai, shlo tuchlu the kofo, they can't force him. The koshkein shlo yachud nasi kofo, hacha shevet atam mechokek. If Marukva can't force him to come court locally, how's he going to force him to go up to Tveria, to go up to Eretz Yisrael? In Bavel, we know that the authority was much stronger than it was in Eretz Yisrael. So the authorities in Bavel can't force him into the Babylonian courts, you know, into the Torah Beit Bati Dinim in Bavel. How are they going to force him up to Eretz Yisrael? Marukva reish golav. Elam efresh v'teinu milotzai kagon damar lebezin agadol kazilna. I mean, I won't listen means I'm not going to listen to you guys. You guys aren't a big enough bezin to listen. So that's what the Beis Din said. Listen, if Yirmiyahu is willing to accept the psak of your Beis Din, try the case there. He says, I want to be up with the big guys. Send them up. We're ready to take to the case. So that was the message sent to him. No, the case was a case of fines. Ubavel lo dine dine knasot. In Bavel, we don't adjudicate cases that deal with knasot. So basically they were saying, send them over to us. You can't deal with halachos of knasot, you can't deal with knas, send them to us. Ah, why did they say to Marukva what sounded to Marukva what sounded like, you call them into you first, and then send them up to us. Why would they say that? That was lachloko kavod. Just to give them kavod, say, okay, we know you can't do this because it's knasot, but you go ahead, call them in, and then you send them up to us. That was to have kavod to Marukva, not anything about whether they could try the case or any or answering any question about do we put them locally before we send them up to the Beit Avad. Okay, we'll stop over here.